So Pat Benatar.
So she's a singer from the early 80s, and my daughter asked, she's like, is she from the 1900s? And my wife paused, like, thinking, oh, my God. Well, I guess she is, yes.
That's great.
November and the waning sun, and all the proofs I'd like to prove, we go down tonight.
Good evening and welcome to episode 60 of Flags Fly Forever, Baseball Prospectus Fantasy Podcast. I am your host, Brett Sayer, and with me as always is Mike Gianella and George Bissell. How are you guys doing on, is it 2017 still?
It might be.
I was going to say the future's so bright I got to wear shades, but I decided not to go with that horrible joke.
And now we all know your thought process.
Oh, my thought process is horrible.
Yeah. So we're still in 2015. Fawcett's in 2017, but that's cool. I think he might be stuck there. like in Lost when those people end up in the 70s. Did you guys watch Lost?
Oh yeah, the Dharma Initiative, and Ben had the like wheel that he spun that somehow made people move through time. Yeah, I try to forget that show because it's already filled my brain up enough when it was off in terms of trying to follow it.
I was gonna make the joke that it was before my time, but I can't get away with that. I saw Lost, Mike.
George, you know, it's okay to say like things in the 90s are before your time. It's not really. Then I just worry about you.
I may not know who Pat Benatar is, but I did see Lost.
We were talking that before the show. George does not know who Pat Benatar is.
I saw the tweet.
Every week we're gonna have to do like a cultural like awakening.
Yeah.
Raising Aces. There we go.
There you go. So we have a good show for you this evening. Let's get started the way we always get started. You can find us at baseballprospectus.com. You can find us on Twitter. I am at Dynasty Guru. Mike is at Mike Gianella. That's G-I-A-N-E-L-L-A. And George is at George Bissell. It's two S's and two L's. Email us, flagsflyforever@baseballprospectus.com. Rate and review us on iTunes and the Stitcher Radio app. So, Mike, let's jump right into it. Do we want to start with the mixed or get to the mixed?
Let's start with the mixed because I think that's a pretty, you know, we've talked the last few weeks about how we've been sitting on the sidelines, and we actually did something. I just moved in the article just because there were people kind of who play only who are like, oh, you know, I'd like to see more of that in the front, or can you mix it up? So I decided to do that. So we made a big play this week. We used most of our fab. And so far, you know, for like the 5 or 6 days that, you know, he's been up, it looks good. We got Miguel Sano for 26. And, you know, one thing that was a little bit surprising is I thought that everyone would bid something. There's a couple teams out of fab. But only six teams bid. And the next highest bids were behind us at 20 apiece from Bobby Colton of RotoWire and James Quintong of ESPN. And I was pretty pleased to get Sano. You know, we talked about this beforehand, Brett. You know, we kind of made the decision that of all the players who are left in the minors who could come up, he was the get. You know, there's some people who are close to him on the stash list, like Hector Alvera and Corey Seager, and we'll actually kind of segue into this a little bit more later in the show with our second segment. But I think I agree with you, Brett. I think Sano, of all the hitters out there who are coming up, I mean, he's the guy to me who could be the really big impact guy. He's not going to be Carlos Correa, certainly, but, you know, who is?
Yeah, and it also fits in well with our team. I mean, we have our team is doing pretty well in a number of categories. Fortunately for us, RBI is a place where we can get some points. And home runs is we're towards the top in homers also, but that's a really important category for us because we're competing with the guys that are right at the top. So, you know, whereas Some of the guys that we might see later in the season have a little bit more speed or might have a little bit more batting average. I think Sano fits our team a little bit better.
Yeah, I would agree with that. You know, the one thing about our team, you know, where the category where we actually look like we need the most help now, which is kind of odd, is batting average. But I think what we're hoping there is, you know, Ian Desmond is the front runner with this, but Lucas Duda, who's been slumping, we've got a few players that we're just kind of hoping kind of go the other way and do a little bit better in the second half. So I don't really worry about batting average when it comes to one player unless it's someone who's, you know, awful. And Sano doesn't fit that profile. He's not going to be a sinkhole in batting average by any means.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think, you know, he's acquitted himself pretty well so far. I think I've been impressed with his approach thus far. You know, he's got one home run so far, and you know, we all know what the power is, but you get a guy up from Double A who has had notable contact issues in the minors in the past, and you know, you never quite know what you're going to get, but he's looked like he belongs, and you know, he's certainly going to go through some rough stretches, but he's got enough talent, and he's got a good enough plan up there that I don't think he's going to really fall off all that much. And
I agree.
Yeah. Hey, should we talk about our team overall?
Yeah, a little bit.
We're kind of halfway through the season, right?
We are, and you know, we haven't done too much of this, and I know, you know, some listeners want to hear it, some listeners groan, but I think unlike last year, it's good to talk about, because last year was like weekly misery porn about how badly we were doing. We're actually, the halfway point was, I think, officially after July 4th games, in terms of the amount of games played. So, yeah, we're a little bit past it. As I'm looking at this, we're 6 points up ahead of Steve Gardner of USA Today. Fred Zinke of MLB.com, who always seems to do well in these contests and has kind of made a charge lately, is in third. But on the whole, we're in really good shape. Our team is – the balance has remained. We've had a couple of injuries with Adam Wainwright and Will Myers, but we've stayed pretty healthy for the most part. And I mean, really, to me, there's two keys. I mean, three keys. One is the balance on offense, which has kind of helped us overcome kind of a mess season by Troy Tulowitzki and an awful season by Ian Desmond, who are our top two picks. The second key is our front three when Adam Wainwright went out of Garrett Cole, Jacob DeGrom, and Jake Arrieta have just been absolutely tremendous. And we got those guys, I think, in what was it, the sixth, seventh, and ninth rounds, if I remember correctly. It was somewhere in that sequence.
No, it was later. We got got Arrieta and DeGrom at the 9-10 turn.
Yeah, that could be right. Well, whatever it was definitely later. But, yeah, the point being, I mean, we kind of defied that you have to take an ace because we took Wainwright in the fifth. And then the third key is really we kind of got chided for not taking closers a second year in a row. And after taking Jenry Mejia and Pat Neshek late and not getting saves, through pickups and one trade, we have four closers right now, and we're charging in that category too. So, I mean, knock on wood, we don't want to, you know, it's a long season. We saw Ray Murphy last year of Baseball HQ, who was out in front most of the year, lose in the last month to Steve Gardner. So a lot can happen. But right now, you know, we feel good about our team, and it's the usual thing. It's better to be in first now than to be in like 11th or 12th or worse.
Yeah, the thing that I find most amusing about our team right now is that, as most of our listeners remember, we finished last year in dead last in both ERA and WHIP, which is, you know, it's not that it's hard to do. It's just, it's not that easy to do.
Well, if you have Edwin Jackson, it's easy.
This is true. but right now we have... actually, especially after DeGrom's outing today, we have a pretty comfortable lead in both categories, which is definitely a nice change of pace for us.
Yeah, we have a 3.07 in ERA and a 1.123 in WHIP. And to give that some context to people who don't play in a 15-team mix, which I know is kind of unusual, 3.34 is the next in ERA and 1.161. is the next in WHIP. So yeah, those are some pretty nice leads. And you know, the thing that kind of is going to allow us to do you know, we have guys on reserve. We've sat Noah Syndergaard the last 2 weeks in part because we've been trying to stream some two-start starters in there because we have the ERA cushion and, you know, in wins we're fourth, so we're trying to, you know, maximize our wins, you know, maximize our strikeouts where we're also fourth. So, it's a good position to be in, and it's a thing about these leagues where if you are in the top three or four, it kind of really allows you strategy. Last year, if you were listening, you kind of remember every week was we have to throw a Hail Mary, we have to do something crazy. We can be pretty strategic with this team right now, which puts us in a good place. And the other thing that helps, you know, and no one roots for injuries, but Steve Gardner lost Giancarlo Stanton to injury, which really hurt him. And he turned around and made a trade where he traded Stanton. What was it for? Was it for Glenn Perkins and Cameron Maben, essentially?
Yep.
Yeah. So, you know, it was one of those trades where when he traded Edinson Volquez as part of the trade. So he kind of made a sacrifice for the rest of the season with Stanton for the present. But, you know, it still hurts him. I mean, you know, going from Stanton to Maben and even getting the closer back kind of hurts him. So, you know, we'll see. Like I said, we'll see what happens. You obviously never want to, you know, do a victory lap in any league, but you definitely don't want to do it in an expert league. But right now, I like the way our team looks.
Yeah, I don't think I would be comfortable taking a victory lap until the last game is over the season. I don't believe in that. I think it's a good reference point to talk about the team a little bit, but we'd be talking about the team whether we were doing well or not, as you know by last year.
Yeah, it's funny. We talked about it more last year. I think this year, and you know, I kind of see this with like experts like. There's a couple sometimes that we'll talk about the teams and how well they're doing, and you're sort of like, well, it's June, it's July, like, be careful, you know. I don't know about you, Brett, it's very rare that I've been in a league that from front to back I've kind of been blowing it or was blowing it out and knew I was going to win. So much can happen in the course of a season.
Yeah, it's extremely rare.
You know, in this type of league, you guys can't stash prospects. So how did you decide to pass on all the ones that have come up so far and to pull the trigger on going after Miguel Sano?
Well, because we didn't get Carlos Correa?
Well, yeah. That's, yeah.
To take a step back, and it's a good question, when we didn't get a closer or when we lost the labor drafts in February, so when Mejia and Nishek didn't work out, we decided to bid big on Jason Grilli. That was our strategy. Based on the timing of the trade, you had to put in a big bid because there was no other way you're going to get him. I think what we bid, like 40 or 42, Brett?
I think it was 44. I think 44 was the number.
So it was a really big, aggressive bid, which kind of limited us, and we've, you know, used our fab throughout the season. So when Correa and Buxton came up, we had, at that point, I think we were like in the high 30s, low 40s, and we decided to bid in the low 30s, and people just bid more. This yeah. case, and we, I think we looked at the time with those two. We're like, well, we like those two, but we think other people will be up. Now with the timing of the season, there's a little less than half left. I think could Oliveira, could Seager, could one of those guys be up? I think they could, but Sano to me was the last definite impact guy based on his team and based on the playing time. So all that factored in the decision, you know, why to go after him aggressively. Versus why with those other guys, I think we were aggressive, but we were like, well, we don't want to blow every single dollar of our fab. And if we did, it right. wouldn't matter because they went for more.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, the nice thing about having about the team that we have, given especially given where we are in fab, is that we're reasonably deep. Right now we're playing with Sano in there. We're playing with Scooter Gennett on the bench, which, you know, by all accounts, Gennett should be a starter in a 15-team mixed league. We also have Aaron Hill in there, who, you know, you could make a case is good enough to be a very back end starter, at least a good guy off the bench. And then our starters are we have a couple of spare starters as well, and It's been fortunate. We've been I think a little bit lucky with injuries so far. We got like Mike said, I mean, we have Wainwright and Will Myers. We haven't gotten hit so terribly. And you know, we're just kind of doing our best to spread it around and making sure that, you know, we assume an injury will come at some point, and whenever that injury comes, make sure we're as best prepared for it as possible.
We have Denard Span, who looks like he might be out until the All-Star break, and Justin Upton right now is day-to-day with oblique soreness, which, you know, I don't really quite know what that is. When you hear oblique, you're like, uh-oh, you know, I hope it's not worse. Something that we kind of did a little bit by design as well is, with the exception of Albert Pujols, last year in 2014, we had an old team. You know, we had guys like Pujols and Chase Utley who started out okay and faded. With the exception of Pujols, our offensive core is kind of young, but not so young. They're kind of in that 25 to 31 age range. And I think that was key, too, which we've avoided the injuries because we have, and some I agree, Brett, is luck. We've avoided them in part because we don't have those older guys who are prone to get hurt.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's, you know, I think that's fair to an extent. So, yeah, so that's it. We'll keep everyone posted as the season goes along, and we'll continue to talk about the team every once in a while as we talk about the Fab. But you're not going to hear any trash talking from us or anything of that ilk, unless it's completely in jest with Steve on Twitter. Yeah, in which case, that's fun.
We have Steve on the show.
Because we love Steve.
Steve's the man.
Steve's really nice, and you know we see him in New York every year for Tout Wars, and yeah, he's a really nice guy. So yeah, if we do trash talk with him, it'll all be in good fun. Was there anyone else in Mix that you wanted to talk about? I mean, like I said, it was a really, well, really in all the leagues, but after Snow, I think there were two guys who, well, there was one guy that had a contested bid, and that was Kevin Gausman.
Yeah, I think it's worth touching on Gausman for like a minute or so. I think he's a pretty good buy as a sort of a guy who could have some upside in the second half. I think, you know, obviously the Orioles just demoted him again, but the Orioles do that every other day, so that's not terribly surprising. He, he's just one of those guys that I will continue to believe in until he just hammers it home that I can't even, I still think he will be a very good starter. I'm not super optimistic for this year, but he certainly deserves to be owned in this league and probably deserves to be started.
Yeah. And, you know, Fred Zinke, I mentioned before, got him. And, you know, it's one of those things that gets me a little nervous because, like I said, he's in third place, and I kind of, as much as looking at Steve, I'm kind of eyeing Fred up too, because he has a pretty successful track record both in this league and in mixed out.
Yep. There's no one else interesting on the wire in mixed.
No, and you know we can touch upon, I'm not going to race through it, but we can touch upon the other leagues too. In Tout NL, I kind of am continuing that strategy of sitting back quietly and just sort of, I did buy somebody this week, but I'm continuing my strategy of just kind of sitting back quietly and waiting. The big buy in the NL was a single-digit guy in Tommy Pham with the Cardinals. I have to admit, I know the name, and you know I certainly know who he is, but I didn't know a lot about him until the buy, and I looked, and you know his profile is pretty interesting, but I do wonder what's going to happen. You know, it seems like he's splitting one of the outfield slots with Peter Bourgeois. Matt Holliday looks like he's going to be back soon. I think John Jay will be back after the All-Star break. And actually, I'm kind of segueing into something selfishly because I stashed him in Tout Wars. But there was a lot of chatter today about Stephen Piscotty finally, you know, kind of getting some practice at first base, which he has been getting, and some talk of putting him into games. But it's a crowded situation in St. Louis, and while I like Pham, I'm not really sure how much he's going to play. That being said, and if you listen to the show, you've heard me say this 100,000 times, it's an NL only, so if you get a couple weeks of production out of him, that's fine. I was very skeptical of Cesar Hernandez when he was picked up, and you know he's been phenomenal.
Yeah, he really has. But yeah, I don't think, I mean, Pham is fine for short-term playing and only, I don't think much is going to come of him for the rest of the year. I think they have enough options there that he's not going to be the guy. And I doubt he's even going to be in the majors for much longer than, you know, like the third or fourth week of July.
He's a guy I think I'd look more at, like, you know, going forward. I kind of agree with, I don't remember who wrote it up at Baseball Prospectus, but, you know, he has that second division starter if everything breaks right profile, but he's more of a fourth outfield type. He could stick on a roster somewhere, but I agree, this year I don't really see him as a good play. And as often happens with the Cardinals and guys like Tyler Lyons, who would, you know, this is what a second division player is, he'd be better off in another organization in terms of fantasy.
Yeah, that's the thing, right? I mean, the Cardinals have a whole lot of fifth starters and a whole lot of fourth outfielders. So, you know, it's not if he was in another organization, he might have an easier time sticking. But they're both crowded situations there in St. Louis.
Yep. You know, somebody who was picked up who might be more interesting once the exodus happens in Philadelphia is Darren Ruff. He went from three to Scott Wildeman, and yeah, I wrote a long thing about Darren Ruff. And if you're one of the 10 people who reads the Fab log and, you know, listen to this, no, we're not doing a guided meditation tonight. I'm sorry about that. I did tell my wife about it. She thought it was hilarious and said she'd do it, but we're not doing it. So, but you know, Darren Ruff, if and when they do clean house in Philadelphia, which looks like it's already starting, I think you get more playing time. And, you know, look, we know the deal with Darren Ruff. I hate to say terrible baseball player because the best guy in AAA is, you know, still in the top 1% of players in the world, but he's not a major leaguer. But if he plays, he could do enough in an NL only where he's worth owning. And again, that's kind of what it comes down to.
He's kind of a better head-to-head guy than like a weekly format guy because you can pick your spots with him against lefties. He could hit one out for you.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And I had him a couple years ago. I had him that 1 year in town as a reserve, and I just hung on to him that he had that, like, you know, ridiculous, like, 2 months where, you know, from a sabermetric perspective, he wasn't productive, but he was hitting home runs, so from a fantasy perspective, who cared?
Yeah.
It's like a worse Mark Canha.
Yeah, that's really, it isn't run.
I like that.
Two more guys I want to touch on briefly. I know the answer to this, Brett, and actually I think he's nursing an injury now, so it's moot. But, you know, Michael Conforto, he will not be up this year, right? You know, I don't see him making an impact with the Mets in 2015. Am I off base? Is that correct?
No, I don't see it. I don't see it because I think if the Mets are still in the race, I think they're going to trade for outfield help. I don't see them bringing him up. The Mets have totally blown this one. They've totally blown any ability to be able to bring Conforto up here because I don't want to go on a Mets rant, but I'll keep it to like 15 seconds. This boils down to last year when for some godforsaken reason the Mets decided to play him in short season the entire season. He was the most advanced college hitter in the draft. Think of whatever you think of his upside is totally separate from this. He was the most polished bat in the draft, and they kept him in short season ball the entire year. He could have started in low A, ended up in high A, started this year in double A, and he probably could have held his own. Instead, he just got to double A, what, a couple weeks ago, and the Mets have just delayed his developmental track by a half a year. For no reason whatsoever, other than to sell some extra tickets for Cyclones games, which is just stupid. But it's the Mets, so you expect that kind of stuff. That's my rant. End rant now.
that was really good, and that was a little bit over 15 seconds, but it wasn't bad. So from a bidding process standpoint, Brian Walton of Masters Ball bid 15. The next highest bid was 1. You know, I think that's fine. And, you know, something else about Tout NL, we all have a lot of money. I have a ton of it because I've reclaimed, like, Devin Mesoraco and Hung Jung Ryu, among others. But there's just a lot of money floating around. So I can see why at this point you're going to put a bid down like that. You know, the bid I put in about a month ago that looks like it's going to really pay off is Aaron Nola, who I think I bid like 4 or 6 on and got him for $1 with Vickery.
I forgot you have Nola on Tout.
I have, he's just sitting there. It's going to be a big thing. I mean, even if he's, you know, we can get into this later, but even if he's like a, you know, pitches like a 4 in an NL only, that's going to be pretty good.
Yeah, we'll get there. That's right. Yeah. That's right in the heart of our topic. So.
Yeah, The other guy I got just as kind of a relief guy because I needed someone to stream was Michael Blasek on the Brewers. He's fine. You know, I bid three. I got him at one in Vickery. You know, shrug, but you need guys like that in NL only if you don't want to run all your starters out there. And, you know, judging by what Jeremy Hellickson's doing tonight, I made the right decision.
Blasek strikes guys out. He's racked up a ton this year.
Yeah, and he's getting vulture wins, too, and he's five of them. You can't count on that, but if they're using him in that position, it means they're going to continue using him in that position, and I might get lucky.
Yeah,
he's. I think I did a valuations piece this week. I think he's on pace to earn 17 in NL only, and you know, middle relievers that can change in a hurry. But he's quietly having a nice little year.
He really is. It's a surprising year, but he is having a nice one. Anyone else you want to talk about before we move on?
Not me, George.
I'm good.
Yeah, I can't picture you. Getting too excited about the only bids. The AL was even quieter. There were four contested players. Grady Sizemore and Alex Presley at six were the highest bids, which really tells you something about how quiet things were in the American League this week.
Yeah, it really does.
I don't even really, you know, Sizemore is going to get regular playing time, but, you know, as I noted in the column, there could be a bit of a dead cap bounce. He could disappear in a couple weeks. Alex Presley looks like a backup, but, you know, he could get some playing time. Of the guys who are contested, I think that Matt Harrison at four could be the most interesting play, particularly as in tout, you can reserve guys and stream them. And Chris Liss of RotoWire, who got him, he's way up in ERA and WHIP. He has points to gain and wins and strikeouts. That's kind of the position we're in labor, Brett. It's an ideal play if those are the categories you need and you can take a hit. And if you take one or two hits and it gets close, you shrug and go, oh, well, I just don't start Matt Harrison again.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's really Jeffrey Marte, who I believe homered today, went for two. There's just not really much to talk about here. Dan Straley at a buck is kind of interesting. Maybe he should have went for a little bit more. Just a really, really vanilla list, even for an AL only.
Mm-hmm. Every week that goes by, that Martin Perez buy is going to look better and better and better.
Yeah.
Take him over Grady Sizemore.
Yeah, I would take a lot of these guys over Grady Sizemore. But I think in an only, I think people are pushing hard for it or for plate appearances.
Yep.
Anything else before we move on to our second topic?
No, let's jump into the topic. So we're going to talk about it. There's been a lot of talk so far this year about all the rookies that have come up and made an impact, and it's kind of hollowed out the pool that I think we've expected to see for the rest of the year, which is both a good thing and a bad thing. Depends on how much fab you have left and what you're looking to add to your roster. So I put out a list on Monday, which was the top 50 dynasty prospects in baseball. But what I kind of want to do is talk about the players on that list who are worthwhile to discuss in fantasy for 2015. See who's still on the way, see who still can make some sort of impact and in what areas they can do it. So I guess let's should we start at the top or do you want to try to organize this in any different way?
I think it's better to start at the top just because otherwise we're going to be jumping around. We're going to run the risk of missing people. But if I'm outvoted, I'm outvoted.
I think it's a good plan. The clear best fantasy prospect who's still in the minors right now is Corey Seager. It's not really all that close. And when I say that, I'm not specifically talking about 2015 value. I'm talking about overall value. But, you know, Seager has done nothing to throw cold water on the excitement and the excitement for this year, but the guy who has thrown cold water on it is Justin Turner, where, you know, Seager sort of had an easy path to playing time there, or at least easier early in the season, and with Hector Oliveira, who we'll get to in a little bit, being sidelined. But with Justin Turner playing like a legitimate, good everyday player, you know, that sort of leaves the displacement of Jimmy Rollins as the lone remaining thing in his way of playing time. So, Mike, my question to you is, what do you think the odds are that Seager does replace Rollins at shortstop this year? And if he does, what sort of performance would you expect out of him?
I kind of like Rollins to keep the job, only because I think he's a better defensive shortstop than we give him credit. I think Seager, the only real question mark we really have is whether or not he's going to be able to stick at shortstop long term. I think there's a decent chance that he comes up and they kind of find a way to get him in there every day between rotating at short, third, whether Kendrick needs a day off at second base, they can move guys around. The other problem is Hector Oliveira is in there as well as an option for them. So we'll see how that plays out in the long run. But, you know, Seager, if you look at the numbers this year, he's, you know, striking out a lot less. He's never going to be a guy who walks a ton. And the speed, I wouldn't expect more than a handful of stolen bases. But there's the potential over like a full season where you could see double-digit home runs for sure. And you're talking a guy who's going to hit between maybe 280 and 300. I don't think that's unrealistic. But I just have some questions about whether or not they're going to replace Rollins entirely. I think it's going to be difficult to supplant a guy like that, especially for a team that's in the playoffs.
Yeah, I agree with all that. I did a couple things. I think one, you know, it's the usual thing with Seager where, I mean, his numbers for his age are really impressive. But, you know, when you do the sabermetric translation, you know, they're a little bit above average. I mean, he's doing very well. He's not lighting up the world to the point, to me at least, where it's forcing the Dodgers' hand. You know, it's not a situation like someone like Carlos Correa where you look at him, you're like, this guy has to play somewhere. He's going to help our team now. He would be better than Rollins, and this kind of ties, I think, though, this ties in the second point, which is you've got Dob Mattingly there. I mean, he's a big believer, I think, in things like leadership and intangibles. Rollins does bring some of that to the table. He brought that to the table here in Philadelphia. It's just very difficult for me to see, even if they brought Seager up, Mattingly going, all right, we're going to sit this guy, or the Dodgers are going to cut him, you know, and stick him in there. So I think Seager could make it up. I think if he makes it up, though, it's going to be a mid-August, late-August kind of thing, and I don't see him as a full-timer necessarily, at least not right away.
Yeah, that's going to be the tricky part, right? I mean, the crowdedness has gotten worse, and as excited as we are about Seager, I think, you know, and I think this is part of what led us to make the big bid on Sano, because Seager's the natural kind of next guy after Sano, and there's just too many question marks at this point in 2015 for Seager. I think we see him, and I think we probably see him at some point in August. I just don't I don't see him making the same sort of impact that I think I thought he would about a month and a half ago. And obviously, there's always the possibility of a Jimmy Rollins injury, which has happened enough. So there's always that way, but you never want to see that anyway. So
Brett, where do you think Hector Oliveira factors into this? Because he's a guy who's right there in terms of being called up. That could happen any day now. So how does he fit into that equation, especially when you have Seager there as well?
Yeah, I think it's more likely that the Dodgers call up Oliveira without a full-time gig than they call up Seager without a full-time gig. I could see them calling up Oliveira and kind of giving him like the Jung Ho Kang treatment that Pittsburgh has given, you know, give him a couple days over the shortstop, a couple days over the third baseman, play him like 4 days a week and just kind of get everyone a little bit of rest as you head down the rest of the season. Other than that, I mean, I really love Oliveira's bat. I just don't, I don't love that situation just because, you know, a guy adjusting to the big leagues for the first time, you know, it's not ideal for him to get inconsistent at bats. So I'm not I'm, you know, for the same reason, I'm not as high on Oliveira as I was about a month ago, but I still, that's no reflection on his talent. I also don't think Justin Turner will keep playing this well, and I don't know.
He's been insane this year. The power has been unprecedented.
He's been completely insane. I don't get it. But
the one thing about Turner is, you know, he isn't really, if you look at the splits, he still isn't really hitting lefties. If there's an opportunity for playing time, that's where it is. You know, we've kind of talked about this, you know, earlier in the year with Alex Guerrero. You know, if Guerrero could play any kind of passable defense at all, you could kind of see a platoon there. But this is a good point, Brett, you know, about Oliveira. Like, it's difficult for a guy, you know, Guerrero got off to a fast start. It's difficult for a guy who's kind of in and out and for a young guy to just kind of magically produce. And Guerrero's really struggled, and I think that's part of it. It's just really going to put Oliveira in a difficult position without an injury to come up, to play every day and be productive. And, you know, right now the Dodgers are doing well, so they're in that nice position where they don't really need to force the issue on any of these guys.
Yeah, the one thing to keep an eye out before we move on to another player with Oliveira, and I guess we've gotten the Oliveira talk out of the way now, is if he starts getting some time in the outfield, that's something to keep an eye out for, because he's got the athleticism to play in a corner, and the Dodgers have at least mentioned getting him some reps in the outfield, which could be another way to get his bat in the lineup.
Yeah, I would agree.
Yeah. So kind of going down the list, I want to talk about two Rangers, and I'm going to kick this out to George, actually. Joey Gallo and Nomar Mazara. I think there's a reasonable chance that we could see one or both. Gallo and Gallo again, no Mazara for the first time. I think there's a reasonable chance we could see them down the stretch. How strongly do you feel that we'll see either one in the majors the rest of this year?
I feel better about Joey Gallo in September than I do Nomar Mazara. I see Mazara as sort of one of the guys who's like Seager. You want to have a job ready for him when you open up a spot. You know, whether an injury in left field or someone like Delino DeShields just falling apart and they need a guy, then maybe I see that. But that's also where Joey Gallo probably goes, you know, if you're assuming Adrian Beltre's healthy. So it's tough. I think they're going to bring up Gallo first if they had to pick somebody. And, yeah, Gallo's terrifying in terms of the strikeouts, but you don't care as long as he's hitting home runs. So you want to take a shot on that power anytime you can. The batting average is going to be ugly, and it's a strange profile. But if all you care about is the power, then, yeah, he's totally worth it. Mazara is interesting because he's really heated up over the last month. He started to really hit for power at AA in the Texas League. He was the player of the week a couple of weeks ago. He's up to 10 home runs now. We're looking at a potential superstar here with this guy. When you look at where you ranked him, Brett, he came in eighth on the top 50 Dynasty Prospects list you put out. So, yeah, this a lot of people are kind of late to the party with Mazara, unless you've been following along, you know, with the content here at Baseball Prospectus for a while. Not a lot of other sites have really been on the bandwagon, so to speak, with him. So he's a guy whose value has increased exponentially this year, and I'm skeptical that he's going to get called up this year, but it wouldn't shock me to see him in the opening day lineup next year.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned the other sites, and it's a little bit of a segue, and you know, I don't know if we're mentioning the other site or not, but
I didn't mention anything specific, I'm just saying.
But it's a thin, you know, the thing about Mazara, you know, and things that were commented on, it's a thin list right now. We, you know, this includes Gallo. Without him, it would be thinner because so many people came up this year. So a lot of the guys on this list are in the low minors. So if it seems like we're going through this quickly, it's because we're not touching upon guys who, you know, could be great at some point, but, you know, we don't expect to make an impact until 2017 at the earliest. To get to your point, you know, I think we kind of, before you're on the podcast, George, I butted heads a little bit with Brett and with Mauricio when he was on, more with Brett on Javi Baez. I like Gallo. I'm just always skeptical, even in this day and age, of a guy with such a high strikeout profile. And it's small sample size on top of small sample size. We kind of saw it with Gal when he first came up. The first half of his stay up, he was hitting a lot, you know, hitting home runs. He was walking. The second half of the stay, his OPS dropped. The strikeouts spiked even more. I think he can play in the majors. You know, I just think that it's still going to be a tough adjustment period for him. For fantasy, it matters less than real life. As you point out, if he's hitting the home runs. I really like Mazzara as a player. He is somebody, yeah. If he's up this year. You know, and a lot of what it comes down to is if the Rangers stay in contention or not. The Rangers were having a nice run with their starters. Now they're going through a really, you know, bad run with their pitching. They probably need to acquire a pitcher at the deadline if they really want to contend. I could see a situation in late August, September, where if they're out of it, where both Mazzara and Gallo play more than they would otherwise. So that could play into it as well.
I mean, the other thing, Mazzara's 20, and Gallo skipped AAA before his call-up. So there's still a lot of development there. Mazzara's not even in AAA yet, so they're not 100% of the way there in terms of being ready.
No, I know. You know, my thing always is, like, I look at this, you know, as opposed to Tino, I look at this more from the here and now fantasy impact compared to the long term. I don't have any doubts. I'm thinking about Mazzara, but even Gallo, if he develops, you know, like you said, he's 21 years old, his birthday's in November, he could still be a player. And the here and now is where I look at him like, well, you know, he still has to make that adjustment. He hasn't made it yet.
Yep.
All I'm going to say is don't give up on Javier Baez.
Well, I mean, you almost have, between the, you know, the tragedy that happened in his family and the injury, you almost have to kind of write this year off. So I would agree, you know, it's tough. And he showed some signs of improvement before the injury, so it's possible that, you know, things can work out.
Yeah, I'm going to be buying Baez like crazy next year when people have just completely forgotten about him and written him off. But that's a story for next year. I'm going to talk for 10 seconds about one other player who we'll move on from really quickly because I don't think it matters much. Kyle Schwarber is the best natural hitter in the minors right now. He's fantastic. He can hit for average. He can hit for power. I don't think we'll realistically see him before September, but I think we will see him in September. And I think he's going to make for a fun piece of that September Cubs team. I just don't see him getting regular at-bats this year, which is really a shame because I want to see him mash major league pitching. But we'll just have to wait for 2016 for that one. So going down the list a little bit, there are guys, just names and names of guys who are either already in the majors because I didn't I used rookie eligibility as cutoff. I included the guys who are in the majors. So we won't talk about Steven Matz or Francisco Lindor. They're already there. We know enough about them. I'm not going to talk about Tim Anderson and J.P. Crawford. They're not coming up this year. I'm going to go all the way down to – we talked about Oliveira, but the guy before him on this list is Aaron Judge of the Yankees. Either you guys want to jump in on Judge as to he just got promoted to AAA about 2 weeks ago. What are the odds that we see him at some point before the end of the year?
See, I'm probably the low man on Aaron Judge of everyone, and I'm the one who probably gravitates towards power prospects just because it's such a rare skill set. If you look at last year, I think it was only 11 guys hit 30 or more home runs. I mean, Judge is a guy who could hit 30 home runs in the big leagues, but if you're talking about him getting called up this year, I don't know if it happens. Like, I'm worried about the strikeouts with Judge a little bit.
Yeah, he's just got such a large strike zone.
Yeah, he's a massive human.
Yeah, but he's another guy who's going to have swing and miss when he comes up. He might have less than you think down the road, but if he gets called up this year, he's going to swing and miss a lot. And I don't see him being a particularly viable option. I mean, this is going to be a theme as we go down this list because of the talent that's already been sucked out of the minors. So it really brings us down to the next guy on the list, and I'm gonna turn it over to Mike for the number 23 prospect here. That's Aaron Nola. We mentioned him a little bit before. What are we gonna get out of Nola? It seems inevitable that he's either gonna come up this weekend or after the All-Star break. So what are we gonna see?
I think what we're gonna see is a solid pitcher. He'll probably, I think some people are expecting a 3. I expect more of a 4. You know, the thing about Nola, you know, we all know this, is that I don't think the ceiling's that high, although he showed a little bit more this year in the minors than I expected. But the floor is not low. There's not a chance. Well, there's a chance any pitcher can fail, but there's not a great chance that he's going to flame out. The mechanics are clean. He looks good. It's not like a situation where he's got like one plus pitch and he's working on everything else. He really could be in the majors now, or he could have been in the majors like a month ago and been serviceable. The drawback with Nola is just the team he's on is obviously not going to be very good. So for fantasy, the wins are going to be almost non-existent. The defense behind him, I don't think should be too bad. I mean, the odd thing about this is that, you know, if it's Cesar Hernandez and not Chase Utley, and if you want me not to rant about something, Brett, just like you want to rant about the Mets, I don't want to rant about Chase Utley right now because that whole situation is annoying. But, you know, with between Franco, who's looked a little bit better defensively, I thought, Galvis, and who they have, you know, on that team, I think they could actually survive, you know, or he could survive with the defense. I, you know, my guess with him is probably something like a 3.5, 3.7 ERA and a pretty solid whip because he doesn't walk guys. He hasn't walked a lot of guys at all.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think the whip is the big selling point now for Nola because I think even before he becomes, even while he's working into what his major league version is going to be, I still think he'll put up a whip in sort of the 1.15 to 1.2 range. I think he can do that immediately. He's got good enough command and control that he can handle that. I'm excited to see him. I think he's going to be certainly going to be better than anyone in that rotation sans Cole Hamels, but it'll be nice to not have to watch Sean O'Sullivan.
The one thing I'll add, you know, just because of the chatter down here in Philadelphia, is that he's coming really soon. David Murphy, the Philadelphia Daily News, is speculating he could be up this weekend, but that was dismissed by a lot of people. Even though they're not saying anything, there's some speculation that he could be up immediately after the break and slot in. It's a good matchup. He'd be home against the Giancarlo Stanton-less Marlins. Which, you know, is a solid, you know, game to have. But even if he's not up for that series, I think he'll be up, I would say, sometime in the next 2 weeks after the All-Star break, conservatively.
Yeah, I think that's right. So as we get towards the end of the list, we're getting towards guys who are, you know, less interesting for fantasy, but still could hold some value. I'm actually curious to get both of your thoughts on how you would rank these three guys for the rest of the season. We got Archie Bradley, Dan Norris, and Chichi Gonzalez. I'll start with Mike. How would you rank those three for just 2015 value from here on out?
Well, that's tough. My head tells me to go Gonzalez, Norris, and Bradley, but I'm going to go with my gut and go Norris, Gonzalez, and Bradley. I think Norris has the talent. What a lot of this comes down to is if the Blue Jays don't make a trade, I think they have to bring up Norris. They've got enough instability at the back of their rotation that they have to. They're in contention. They have to try to improve. I don't think they should just sit on Norris and, you know, kind of wait on his development. If they make a trade, you know, I know Cole Hamels has said he doesn't want to go there, but you know, if they make a trade, then obviously maybe they'll wait on him. But I think there's too much talent there. So I think he's going to get a shot. I think he'll do, you know, well with that shot this time. Gonzalez, we kind of saw out of him what I expected. You know, he's pretty solid. He struggled a little bit in his last couple outings, but I think he's a solid pitcher. Bradley, I just have at the bottom, because at this point, I don't know what to think, you know, of what he's going to do. I don't have a good feel for him at all. I know there's some people out there from a scouting perspective that are really down on him. I'm not quite as down on him as those people are, but I do wonder if we're ever going to get like the ace or even the number two that some people are expecting, and if he's going to be more of a middle guy or even a 4.
I would go probably Norris one, because I like the strikeout potential. I'm trying to look up his AAA numbers. He's averaging right around a strikeout per inning in AAA this year through 12 starts. So, Gonzalez, I like him long term, but he gives you absolutely nothing in terms of strikeouts. So that's a huge negative in his column right now. And I would put Bradley second. Yeah, it just felt like things went off the rails. After he got hit by that line drive, everything just kind of spiraled out of control for him. And he's just kind of hasn't looked like the same guy. So I would go with Norris first, Bradley second, taking a shot that he gets back to, the pitcher we thought he was at the start of the year when he basically made the opening day rotation, and then Gonzalez third.
Yeah, I'm gonna go Norris, Bradley, and Gonzalez, and that makes me a little sad because I really do like Chi-Chi a lot long term. I just, the combination of the strikeouts and the competition that's about to come back is tough. We talked about Martin Perez a little bit at the beginning. I really like Perez to hold down one of those rotation spots the rest of the year. And though, they certainly have plenty of guys who could flame out pretty quickly, I think the lack of strikeouts is going to come back to hurt him for right now. But I don't think it's going to be like that forever. Really, scrolling down the rest of the list, there's really not much else here. Real quickly, do you think, Mike, do you think we see Jose Peraza this year in Atlanta?
Yeah. I doubt it. It seemed at one point that we might, I think at the beginning of the year we thought it was just a matter of time, but he didn't have a lot of experience in the high minors, and it looks right now, even though he's doing okay there, that the Braves want him to get that full year, so I doubt it.
Oh, yeah. See, I like Peraza. He's had a pretty good year in AAA. They tried experimenting with him in the outfield to kind of give him some options, but yeah, I'm kind of with Mike. I don't know if we see him, but you're gonna want to own him once he does get called up because the speed is real.
Yeah, the speed is definitely real. I think it's probably gonna take a Cameron Maybin trade at this point, and I just don't know how realistic that is. I think they would stick him in center field if that happened, but yeah, I think that's all. That's all we got for now. We'll stay tuned. We'll see who else gets called up, and I'm sure we'll talk about them as they come and as they get bid on in labor mixed, because we'll be sitting back on the sidelines talking about other people's pickups because we have $6 left. But with that, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll come back and close things out. Back. Thank you for listening to episode 60 of Flags Fly Forever. We have and continue to be a Baseball Prospectus fantasy podcast. Read us at baseballprospectus.com. Come subscribe. Premium membership gets you access to all of our articles and Pacoda, and super premium membership gets you access to all that, plus some ebooks and our fantasy answering service, the Bat Signal. It's wonderful. We answer it all the time. We're very, very happy about it. Play with us on DraftKings, the daily fantasy game that we have going on there. You can usually find us talking about it on Twitter, and if you can't, there's a link to it on the Baseball Prospectus homepage. With that, we are out. We will see you next week, and have a good night. Bye-bye.
See you in the future.
Always.
Later, Fawcett.
I think we thought our new sign-offs.